to The Trendline from the SiriusXM studios in Washington, D.C. Here's Kristen Soltis Anderson.
I'm joined now by friend of the show, frequent guest Rich Tao. He is president of Engagis. He is always doing fascinating focus groups with critical voter audiences, swing voters, you name it. And he's here today to talk a little bit about some folks he spoke to in Pennsylvania. Rich, thank you so much for joining me.
It's great to be back.
Well, let's talk a little bit about these swing voters you spoke to in Pennsylvania. Just set the scene a little bit. Who are these folks? Where do they live? And how were they selected to qualify for this group?
Sure. So we had 13 Trump to Biden voters on April 12th. These are people who voted Trump in 16 and then Biden in 20. They participated across two focus groups, one with six people, one with seven. Six of these were registered Republicans, four were registered Democrats, three were independents. And we talked with them about a whole variety of issues in the news, the upcoming elections in Pennsylvania, and a variety of other policy issues. And they were selected through our partner in the project, Schlesinger Group, which is an organization that specializes in focus group recruiting.
Love Schlesinger Group. I use them to help recruit participants for focus groups all the time. So that sets the scene nicely. Tell me a little bit then about the topics that you covered. You were doing these focus groups in the wake of some changes in the Philadelphia area around masking policy. Set the scene a little bit in terms of the subject matter.
So part of the conversations were around the whole idea of masks. And I should say, so there were 13 respondents. 10 of them actually were from southeastern Pennsylvania, either in Philly or in some of the ring counties around Philadelphia. And Philadelphia had just announced that they were going back to the masking indoors. So I wanted to know what they thought about that. And when I started the conversation about that topic by asking them, who feels like COVID is over at this point? And only two of them said yes. Most of them thought that the pandemic was still going on. And I said, well, how would you know when it's over? And the response was basically the numbers have to be low and stay low for a protracted period of time. This constant spiking and dipping was evidence that the pandemic isn't over. So for a lot of them, they think it's still going on. And 8 of the 13 people supported Philadelphia's reinsertion of the masking mandate.
This is really interesting because there's the debate that I have seen play out over this among kind of pundits and commentators is, on the one hand, you have folks that will talk about surveys that show mask mandates to not be terribly unpopular. They're much less popular than they used to be, but they're not, at least in the polling data, politically disastrous. On the other hand, the actions that have been taken by a lot of blue state governors, city mayors, and so on and so forth, and frankly, a little bit the Biden administration as of late, has sort of suggested that they view this as the political headache, that the longer there are requirements around things like masks, the longer people will be reminded of this, the burden of this pandemic, and they would very much rather go into November with America feeling a bit more like normal. So the debate is, on the one hand, folks saying, look, according to the polls, this isn't so unpopular. Actions speak louder than words. And it seems like there's a clear sense that from political leaders that they view things like these mask mandates as potentially problematic. Did you find that one or of those sides seems to be right? Or is there, it's more of a shade of gray in between?
I think it's a shade of gray because there's clear fatigue in wearing masks or feeling like you have to wear a mask. So most people don't like to wear a mask. I mean, that's the thing. People enjoyed wearing masks. This would be a no-brainer decision, right? It's because people don't like it personally. The issue is whether they think it's necessary. And as someone who lives in suburban Philadelphia, I live just outside the city on the main line. I can tell you straight up that there's a lot more attentiveness to mask wearing here than there is, for example, 30 miles west of Philadelphia. And I think people just in this community overall kind of get it in terms of it's a health issue. You should wear it. It's being recommended by the CDC. And the city says you need to start wearing masks again. Although you don't want to do it, it's probably the prudent thing to do. And again, think about who I'm talking to here. I'm talking to Trump to Biden voters in the state of Pennsylvania. So these are people who gave up on Trump, in part gave up on the way Trump was handling the pandemic, or in their view, mishandling it, and they chose Biden for a reason. So I think that, that it's part of the audience I'm talking to as well that really matters here.
Now, of those folks who felt like the mandates should be kept in place, you know, you mentioned the idea of, well, maybe we can get rid of them once cases are low. But one thing that I've struggled with is it doesn't really feel like there is a clear off-ramp. That folks keep saying, well, once cases are low, we can do this again. But cases are very low relative to where they were just a couple of weeks ago. They've been mostly headed in the right direction. There's some questions about this new variant of a variant, the Omicron too fast, too furious, that is potentially changing the calculation a little bit. But one thing that just frustrates me personally is the folks that say, we've just got to keep doing this a little bit longer. It doesn't feel like any time in the near future we're going to be in a world where COVID is gone or even close to gone. So that to me doesn't feel like a real off-ramp. For these folks that said, we believe it should be back in place until things are lower, did they set any kind of concrete benchmark, anything that you think would be a signal to them that, okay, now is the time we can change our policies?
Yeah, I think part of it in Philadelphia was that the reason they reinserted it was that numbers were starting to tick back up again. And they wanted to get ahead of it. That was what was explained locally to people here about why that this was a necessary step. This wasn't some sort of arbitrary, let's just impose it while numbers are still low. It was because there was a fear in the health community here locally that that was something that was important to do so you didn't have a huge spike in the community again. I think for the people I spoke to, the real evidence for them that the pandemic is over and safe not to be to not wear masks is the numbers staying low for an extended period of time, months. That's how they would know the pandemic was over, and they really probably wouldn't have to wear a mask again. As long as the numbers kept yo-yoing up and down, their feeling was, yeah, it's going to keep coming back, and when that happens, I'm going to need to wear a mask.
One of the other things that you found in this focus group, these focus groups about COVID, was that for many of these participants, COVID is not a top issue. You found that Ukraine and rising prices were far more often the sorts of things that respondents were focused on. A quote from you is that among swing voters in recent months, COVID has morphed from a menacing siren to mere muzak. Tell me a little bit about, you know, I mean, if these folks are concerned enough about COVID to say, hey, let's put mandates back in place, is it just that the other issues are an even bigger deal, or is it that COVID itself has become small potatoes?
Well, the numbers have dropped, as you said, nationally. So this isn't something that people are obsessing over day over day. I mean, you can't sort of say hyper focused on something month after month for 2+ years. I think other things are going to supersede their concerns, and clearly inflation, crime, gun violence, war in Ukraine, go down the list of other issues, really have been more dominant in people's minds in terms of their own top priorities. It isn't to say that there aren't moments where COVID will rear its ugly head and become a higher priority temporarily. I think we saw that here with Omicron, for example. But it'll recede when the numbers start to recede and other things will take its place.
I also want to ask you a little bit about the upcoming primaries in Pennsylvania. There's some interesting contests on both sides of the aisle, especially when it comes to the United States Senate. Most notably, we've had Donald Trump coming out to endorse Dr. Mehmet Oz of, I think, Oprah fame. I think Oprah is who made Dr. Oz a star. But he, of course, you know, has been a television personality himself. He is running against Dave McCormick, who is a former, I believe, hedge fund executive, has some military experience as well, has brought on a lot of Trump staffers to his team, but did not secure that endorsement. Tell me a little bit about what your swing voters, which again is a different group than, you know, sort of core primary voters for either party, but what these swing voters are sensing about the candidates in the race on either side.
Well, I got an earful about Dr. Oz.
What'd they say?
Well, so yeah, and there's a lot here. And in fact, I would encourage your listeners, if they want, after your show is over, to go to swingvoterproject.com and listen to the audio of the highlights from these sessions. It was just absolutely sensational from some of the stuff that they said. And what we did was we showed unidentified photos of McCormick and Oz to the respondents. And keep in mind, six of these people were registered Republicans, so they can vote in the May 17th primary in Pennsylvania. And these respondents, whether they were Republicans or not, 12 of 13 could identify Oz just by his picture. Only one could identify McCormick by his picture. So that's the first thing. Oz has much
And that's one reason why my, you know, sort of business partner in crime, Patrick, he believes that Oz is very formidable, because he says, hey, look, this is kind of the same thing we saw with Donald Trump. The fact that I'm in the grocery store checkout line and I look over and for $2, I can buy, you know, Dr. Oz's diet secrets. We in the political consulting class may scoff at that, but that actually has some kind of meaning out there in terms of at least name ID. But in reading your analysis, it does not actually sound like the Republicans you talked to were big fans of Dr. Oz. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I asked people to tell me what words came to mind when they thought of Dr. Oz. Here's what I got: celebrity and a clown. Opportunist, hack, smarmy, fake. He gives me a creepy vibe. He looked like something from Dexter. Reminded me of Dexter.
Oh my gosh.
Did you see the show Dexter? That's what the respondent asked.
I am familiar with the show Dexter.
Yeah.
Oh my.
Yeah. So the thing was, and Kristen, here's what's really critical, because I pushed them a little bit on this. I said, well, you know, they would complain that Oz wasn't a politician and he was a celebrity. I said, well, isn't that the reason why some of you voted for Trump the first time? And the difference is, well, one, Trump's alternative, the alternative to Trump in 2016 was Hillary Clinton. So they don't feel the same way about McCormick because they don't know anything about McCormick. So he doesn't carry baggage. The second thing is, and you know, you heard this as I have a zillion times about Trump, he's a businessman. They don't feel that way about Oz. And I got some real pushback. You know, one of my favorite responses in this focus group, one of the Republican voters, was she was concerned that Oz, if he became a senator, would have so many other obligations, being a surgeon and a TV personality, he wouldn't have time to serve as senator appropriately. So you got a lot going on here with Oz.
That is a lot going on. Well, I guess my other question then is, so one, you've got the McCormick team is already out with ads splicing together clips of Dr. Oz touting the value of masks. So to loop this back to our earlier conversation, while for your median or swing voter, masks might not be such a problem, clearly the McCormick team thinks that Oz's more sort of moderate or centrist positions on COVID are going to hurt him with these primary voters. But there's also the question of Trump's endorsement. You note that Trump's endorsement did not seem to help these voters come around to him. I mean, what did these voters say when you said, hey, Donald Trump actually endorsed Dr. Oz in this race?
Well, it was interesting. the Trump's endorsement went over like a Led Zeppelin. It was an absolute disaster. It was because, again, these people turned away from Trump in 2020. A lot of them dislike him. And in fact, some of them said that they despise him and they don't trust him. And some of them thought that Trump was endorsing Oz for Trump's own benefit, not Oz's benefit. So there was a lot of skepticism about what Trump was trying to do. And it did not help Oz in the least with these people who had abandoned Trump. But of course, as you identified, Trump's endorsement is meant to help the people who still support Trump, not the people who oppose him. So in the primary, that really could make a difference, I imagine, for some group of people. But what was missing, and this is what was so stunning to me, was any real sense of preference for Oz, openness to Oz. It was as though they'd all made up their minds and they were all marching away from him. And it wasn't that they loved McCormick. It was that McCormick was basically an empty vessel from their perspective. I showed them a couple of McCormick ads, as well as an Oz ad. They generally liked the McCormick ads. One of them thought it was kind of hokey. There's one that takes place here in Pennsylvania with a couple of his high school buddies teasing him for, you know, being more interested in picking up girls than in more serious stuff. But, you know, the tenor of it was McCormick's a real guy. He's a real Pennsylvanian, unlike that guy Oz, who, you know, is not from here. Even though McCormick, you know, has lived in Connecticut for a long time, he grew up in Pennsylvania. So, you know, the sense was McCormick gave them a reason to like him and not to mistrust him. And Oz wasn't able to do that for himself. Oz raised more questions than he answered. And that, to me, was a real problem with this particular crowd.
Well, and even if this doesn't necessarily spell doom for Oz's campaign in the Republican primary, because that'll be a different group of people, and maybe Trump's endorsement will have a lot of weight there, that has to make Republicans nervous nationally if Dr. Oz is successful in that primary, if these swing voters are not big fans, as it sounds. But Rich, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining me. I always love having you on the show. Greatly appreciate it. We'll get you back soon next time you come out of the field.
Great. Thanks, Kristen.